Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to our show. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly here.
Well, we're going to have some fun today. I'm in that kind of weird mood where I just find everything to be sort of amusing, probably because I'm in homeowners insurance purgatory.
What does that mean?
I'm going to tell you in a minute. First, I want to welcome our listeners and make sure they have our phone number. Call us at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And we love your emails also. So this is a fascinating thing. I'm calling it homeowners insurance purgatory. Because it's been crazy. So I had, I don't even know how this can happen, but you know how they say to err is human, but to really screw things up takes a computer? This was an error by a human into a computer, and now the computer will not cooperate. So I had this homeowner's policy on a house, and they had put in the wrong date when they started the policy. So they created a policy that for a year that I didn't have the house. So, so in closing on the loan, figured this out and had like at the last final hour had to have them fix this. So we thought that it was actually fixed.
Okay.
But it wasn't fixed. 1 year later, fast forward, the computer kicks back, cancels the last year's policy, leaving the house uninsured.
Oh my gosh.
Nobody has the ability to override this computer. Meanwhile, the bank is saying, if you don't have insurance, we have to write an override policy, which is going to cost you double or triple, like thousands of dollars. And I'm just tearing my hair out. I'm trying to contact this insurance company. And of course, it's a call center.
Right.
Call centers. Okay, ma'am. Well, it'll take 24 to 48 hours before we get back to you.
Yes.
I don't have 24 to 48 hours. I'm getting the final cancellation notices and all these things. And literally, I feel like I'm just sitting in this corner.
It
really makes me feel like I'm being victimized.
Yes.
And it's terrible. So I have to laugh about it because it will work itself out.
It will.
Some way, somehow or another. But I feel bad. Like thankfully, if I have to pay the extra money, I can afford it. So I'm very grateful for that. But imagine somebody who couldn't, like those extra $100 or thousands of dollars could like tear them apart. And there's no, like, I can't get anybody to fix
it. That to me is the most frustrating part. It's like when you cannot get through to somebody and you're like, please, and you've pressed 1 and 7 and 12 and like you just can't get through. I feel for you.
And it brings back, it's so funny because there was one time I was talking to a company. There was a company called Ditech Funding. This was years and years ago when I was getting a condo, and it was a long time ago. And they had locked in a rate, right? And they promised when you sign up with them, they lock in an interest rate. And that's the interest rate, whether it goes up or not or down, you're at least assured that you have the safety valve of that. And apparently, they had not put in the right date, again, this thing.
Oh, my God.
I was then, when I was about to sign up to get the loan, the interest rate was like a point and a half higher, which would make the payments unaffordable, and I couldn't do it. And there was nobody I could talk to, and I was trying to play the threatening card, like being really strong.
Yeah.
I was really not. I was in my like early 30s, and I did not have my shit together at that point in terms of how to deal with people. And I ended up getting so flustered, and I was swearing and cursing on the phone. And they basically hung up on me.
Right.
And then would never talk to me again.
Oh, my God. Right. So you learned, like, that's not going to get me anywhere.
So part of why I'm talking about this is because I think it's so fitting for our topic today, which is workplace woes and what it must be like for people when they're on the outside as customers if the inherent workplace where you're working with a company is all screwed up.
It's all screwed up and you're uncomfortable and you have to go to that place day in and day out. It's very tough and you don't have a lot of options.
No. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Uh-huh. But we are so glad to be here. And again, the phone number 323-203-0815. Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. We're nice people. We like your calls. We can share lots of experiences. We love your questions. questions and your comments. And
it does not have to be on Workplace Woes today.
No,
it can be about anything.
You know, yeah, we put in a topic just so we have something to talk
about.
But we love questions about anything, relationships, anything that's on your mind. Last week, we had a great caller who was sharing some of his woes about a critical spouse and how challenging that was. Yeah, that was
It was heartbreaking, I think, because it sounded like a really good guy and just sort of caught in this marriage where he just felt criticized all the time. And like you were saying, it sounds like the spouse is insecure and some jealousy, and that's kind of coming out in the way that she's treating him. And, you know, maybe she feels some power by criticizing him.
Yeah, well, we've all been there with critical people.
Yes.
Right?
It's very tough.
Yeah, so we learned some interesting things about each other last week also.
Oh, yes.
About our histories and...
Oh, right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always fun to share stories with you because I, just as much as you think you know somebody, then when the show just inspires memories of different things and at different times.
I feel like I'm in your therapy room. Like I'm you know, sharing. Vice
Dual
versa.
Shrinks for,
exactly.
for each other. Find a shrink for each other. Yes. Anyway, so do you have some crazy workplace stories?
I shared my last one, the one that like comes to my mind last week about how I just emailed the boss of this company and just sort of was like, oh, here's my great idea, and then got fired. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely really, really hard in general. And I think we even got an email about this of just when you have a really difficult boss, what to do. Mm-hmm. I think I hear that a lot with clients coming in, and they're just like, oh, my boss is so difficult to work with. And it's just hard. It's a hard scenario to deal with because, like you said, you can't psychoanalyze your boss. You can't really say anything. You just have to, you know, you have to speak nicely, communicate well, but kind of leave the psychoanalysis out of it.
Sure.
It's very tough.
Yeah, about 6 or 7 years ago, I actually, this was my undertaking about understanding workplace issues. And actually, that was a book that I wrote called Your Boss Is Not Your Mother, because it was always fascinating to me about how much the workplace can actually resemble a family system. And the dysfunctions that one is used to in their own family system can often show up and get recreated in the workplace.
Wow.
And sometimes it's entirely the boss's problem, or it's entirely some other coworker, but oftentimes it's our own expectations of our coworkers and our bosses that get us into trouble.
Wow.
So in other words, sometimes if we have unhealed wounds from childhood in terms of not having enough attention or affection or acknowledgement for praise for our good doings, then we walk into the workplace very hungry for people to give us that extra pat on the back. And sometimes we expect unrealistic things from people as if they're supposed to make up for the emotional wounds that were created in childhood.
That is absolutely amazing. And I could so see that.
And I certainly remember that as a youngster, you know, when I was doing my internships and getting into the, because I really had a strong need and a hunger for a lot of praise, for acknowledgements. Those were in short supply growing up. And so it was really important for me. So I'd often become too friendly with people at work, just like absolutely try to engage too much to get like my best buddies and my best friends. And obviously in a therapeutic community, that can be very easy to do because there's a lot of compassionate and warm people who also got into this field simply because they felt a lot of emotional wound in their lives, but could lead to some real craziness. I worked at this agency once with kids that were, you know, removed from the homes and stuff. And it was from the top down. I mean, there was so much, I mean, I hate to say this, but incestuous behavior in the sense of, you know, the boss being, you know, giving all the best jobs to either the brother-in-law and the sister-in-law and the daughter and the uncle. And they, like, it was like this family affair within this thing. And most of the people that were hired were not qualified.
Right.
And then one day I was passing by the administrator's office and I overhear them saying, therapists are like potted plants. You can move them around from one room to the next and no one will notice.
Oh my God.
Could you imagine?
Oh,
you know,
my God.
A novice, I'm new, I'm in the field. I mean, I was probably in my second year of graduate school, and just my heart was crushed.
Oh.
I'm going to be just like I love potted plants, but I'm going to be moved
around
and no one will notice? It was heartbreaking.
That is so upsetting. Oh, my God. Well, yeah, I could totally see people saying that. I think a lot of people just, you know, they get jaded, they're frustrated, and you know, they don't feel the passion that they once used to or never did, and you know, they can take it out on the workers. That's very tough.
Yeah, it was awful. I tried to ask for a raise because we were getting a small stipend, and the administrative woman said, "Oh, I can make 5 minutes for you. Come to my car at 9 o'clock while she was putting on her makeup."
So, oh my God, this is hilarious! So what happened?
I got a very small raise, but it was the most
crazy.
It was crazy. So then I ended up looking for another job,
right? Exactly,
for another internship and doing all that. But
yeah,
you know, just you can just imagine the dysfunction that can happen. And my experience also, share with me some of yours also, is that the more dysfunctional it is at the top, mm-hmm. then the worse it is.
Absolutely,
at the bottom.
Of course.
You gotta,
I feel like they should have like mandatory consultants who come in, you know, that can help restructure and figure things out. Because I was at an internship too where it was totally dysfunctional, and it was hard being at the bottom and really not being able to do anything about it, but like kind of seeing it sort of with fresh eyes and being like, oh gosh, this is not working, but then not being able to say anything because mm-hmm. you know, it's not my place, or you know, I'm just the lowly intern,
right.
Who can't really say anything. But yeah, it's very tough.
Yeah, and there's so many issues that can arise in the workplace that people struggle with. I mean, there's can be favoritism,
yes.
right, or backstabbing, mm-hmm. or you know, you can actually have an abusive coworker or an abusive mm-hmm. boss, and then it becomes so frustrating. And talk about my homeowner's insurance purgatory.
Exactly.
I mean, being in an employment situation where you know, maybe a work situation that you really need the job,
right.
that you know, people will say, hey, you know, you're not a victim. You have choices mm-hmm. here. You can move on. But gosh, even in recent times with the job market. It being so dismal, it's not easy for people to just pick up and walk out and say, you know, the heck with you.
Exactly.
I'm off to something bigger and better
right.
and somebody that's healthier.
Yes, right? Exactly. It's they
scary.
Just have to withstand it.
Yeah.
They don't have any other choice. Yeah. It's very, very tough.
It is.
And what are your thoughts about dating in the workplace?
Well, you know, I love that question because I know that so many people spend a big chunk of their time at work, right? I mean, you know, a lot of people, it's a third of their life. At least for many people, it's even more. So it's right. going to be a big pool of people that people are going to end up encountering
sure.
that may be where you find the one, so to speak,
yes.
or at least people that you're attracted to.
Uh-huh.
So my rule of thumb is never if somebody is actually above you
right.
or below you. I just think that...
So it has to be the same level.
I think so. And
yeah.
probably not in the same department. You know,
right.
if it's an independent kind of company where you're big, maybe independent sales agents, that's one thing.
Right.
But if you're actually working close by with somebody,
yes.
it'd be like, you know, sleeping with your neighbor.
Yeah.
I mean, who's going to move if it doesn't work out?
I know. That's
you know,
so hard.
And as much as people would like to think of themselves as mature
yeah, exactly.
and they can handle it, matters of the heart have a whole different set of rules, right?
Sure, exactly. Yeah, no, but that is funny about the neighbor, because I once had a friend who was dating a neighbor, literally catty corner, and then they ended, and it's like, oh my God, that's so hard. I mean,
right.
every day you're seeing this person, you know, very, very tough. But I agree with you. I think you think like, oh, well, it'll be fine. If we break up, it'll be amicable and everything's fine. But it's like, you never know. Something could go down and, you know, there could be infidelity or, you know, some sort of big issue that they didn't account for. And then it's a whole different ballgame. And then they got to see the person and work with them. And
of course. Yeah. And in the, you know, the falling for someone phase,
yes.
you often don't recognize or know their sort of dark side in terms of, you know, we often get misguided in believing that if somebody's talking badly about somebody else,
yeah.
it's because that other person must have hurt our loved one, right?
Exactly.
Entirely the
yes.
victim. And then, you know, 6 months down the line, you're that person they're talking about
yep.
who wounded
sure.
them and victimized them, et cetera, et cetera. And you're like, how did I end up in that
exactly.
seat,
yeah.
right? So you don't really know that the person that you are falling for isn't kind of cuckoo,
right.
you know, or
yep.
vindictive or vengeful or,
yes.
you know. Because usually when people are like that, they paint a horrible picture of the person who they felt justified to be mean to.
Sure.
Right? So you almost fall for it. You almost think, oh, yeah, I would have done the same
yeah.
thing. How could you not? Of course. You know, I would never do that to you. And then
yeah.
all of a sudden that person perceives you as having slighted them or,
sure.
or mistreated them in some way. And all of a sudden you're target practice.
Yes, exactly.
And in a workplace setting, boy, that can be just
very
deadly.
Yeah.
Just horrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so...
But I bet it's very common for the boss and an employee to have some sort of encounter. I mean, it's got to be... I would love the statistics on that, but it's got to be pretty high.
Well, even in our field years ago, I don't know how much background training you have in psychoanalysis, like the actual traditional psychoanalysis, the students would be in analysis with either their teachers or supervisors, and it would be really, really messy boundaries. And almost like 9 times out of 10, the doctor would end up sleeping with the patient, and then they would get married and something would happen.
Right,
they
exactly.
would get a divorce and it would get really, really messy.
Wow.
But it was common. I mean,
yes.
So many of the ethics and boundaries that have been created in the last 20 years was because somebody saw that and said, that is not okay.
Yeah.
You know, you have somebody who's in a very vulnerable position, disclosing all of their inner secrets, thoughts. That relationship's never going to be equal.
Exactly.
Right? Because this person is holding all this stuff for
you.
Right? And then so to actually take advantage of them that way. And moving that outside of our field, I mean, if you have somebody who's your superior, just remember, if they approach you or they are trying to make a pass at you, make a play at you, not only is that sexual harassment, but just keep in mind, you're never going to have an equal relationship with that person.
Right.
You know, even if you climb the ladder and you get to that
kind
of level, it didn't start out that way.
Sure. So it's never going to be that way. Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, I think a lot of people, too, are really nervous to approach HR about that kind of stuff because of their job or, you know, it's a thorough process. It's a tough situation, I think.
Sexual harassment has to be one of the most ugliest and brutal experiences for all parties involved.
Yep.
Because, sadly, the person who is being victimized and actually, you know, wrong and harm is being done to them, the corporate climate of exposing people who do wrong is brutal to the one who's doing the exposing. It's sort of like, you know, the criminal who points at the person who called the cops. I'm in jail because you told on me.
Exactly.
No, you're in jail because you committed a crime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's not like that. I've had several clients actually try to go through sexual harassment cases and have a hard time finding work again. That's not to discourage somebody if you have a good case to take that on. But know that you're up against, sadly, not a friendly climate about that. It's almost like, you know, you become the bad one.
Exactly. Right. The rat, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very tough.
Terrible. Have you ever had an inappropriate advance in a workplace setting?
No, thank God.
Yeah.
No, thank God. That has not happened. No. There was a coworker I was working with, but it was not it was mutual. We dated. I forgot about that guy. But no, nothing, thank God, that was inappropriate. I bet you have a story.
Of course.
You're looking at me like, uh-oh.
Why do I do this radio show?
Yeah,
I've got stories. Stories and stories, yes. Fortunately, I can laugh about all of them.
Good, exactly.
Yeah. Actually, I had a couple, but the one that stands out was, and I have no qualms about exposing this person on air. Because if he's listening.
Is it Bill Cosby?
No.
Just kidding.
Actually, I had worked for this company. It was an eating disorder clinic type of setting. It was actually a program within a hospital setting, so the hospital didn't own the program. It was an independent program. It was expanding and moving into a couple different settings. So I was working for this group of psychiatrists, and then they suggested that I go run the program out here in San Fernando Valley and work under this other psychiatrist who was going to be the medical director of the program. He was the sleaze from hell. I mean, I am talking like every sleazy thing that you could ever imagine. And we had a deal, and I was really naive at this time.
Yeah.
We had a deal where I was going to be doing a big chunk of the work and basically doing a lot of his work as well, but he was going to give me a little percentage of all that he was paid according to, because I would be servicing a lot of clients, taking care of a lot of charts and different things, and kind of more administrative than but certainly a huge chunk of administrative. So that was going to be my compensation, but he wasn't getting paid up front. So we had sort of this handshake deal. Well, I grew up in handshake deals. My dad was a handshake guy.
Oh, okay.
He made a handshake with you. That was his word, and you could count on that. And so that's kind of how I grew up. So I kept going after him and going, I really would like to have this on paper. Can we have this on paper? Oh, come meet me for dinner. We'll have dinner. And then I felt like I was being seduced to get a business a paper
yep.
done. And I had to go to dinner with him. And I'm like, this is not feeling right.
Yeah.
I don't like this, you know. But then I was caught between a rock and a hard place. Like, if I didn't do this, then I wasn't going to get paid anything
exactly.
that he owed me. And that's actually what happened. I finally set my boundaries.
Oh my God.
And then he withheld all the money. And he wouldn't pay me. I actually had to get an attorney fought him. And it was a fairly substantial chunk of money, which I ended up getting paid, I think, 10 cents on the dollar for it.
Oh my God.
It was just terrible.
Terrible.
You know, I mean, I would have to say that part of why I think he was able to target me was because I was naive and I did. He was a narcissist. And
right.
I did look up to him.
Sure.
And I did, you know, sort of revere him because he was so smart. And, you know, I wanted to learn a lot from him. But he took advantage of that so badly. But I can say to this day, I did get vindication. There were four counts of fraud against him. He was charged by a grand jury.
That's
great. He ended up doing a lot of crooked things. Like
After you.
After me. Yes. Years later, it turned out that he was billing patients who no longer were in, billing the insurance companies of patients who were no longer in the facility. They were back at home, like they could have been from Iowa or Oklahoma, and he was billing their insurance as though they were current patients. So he was raking in all this money. So he got charged on the two I know of, for forgery and mail fraud, for sure. And I don't know how much prison time, but if you're out there and you're listening, I'm so glad. That's what they say,
incredible.
Sweet revenge, right?
Yes. Well, while you were talking, I did remember something.
Okay, cool. Sure.
So I was 21. I was coming out to LA for the first time doing some acting, and I had submitted some postcards with my picture, you know, to agencies to kind of see if they'd represent me. And one guy out of all the 300 I sent calls me. I'm like, okay, great. He's like, you know, oh, hey, I'd love to meet with you. I'm like, okay, great. You know, so I said, okay, great. I'll call you when I come out. So about 2 weeks later, I called him. He's like, okay, hey, you know, why don't we meet at this restaurant? And I'm thinking, is this how it works in LA?
Oh,
like,
dear.
Do you know, I really didn't know.
Sure.
And I had no one to ask. And I thought, okay, well, maybe they're pretty laid back, or maybe they, you know. So, of course, it's like you have that instinct, like, this doesn't feel totally right. But then I was like, I kind of talked myself out of it. Like,
Now, this was a potential agent?
Yes.
It was a actual bona fide talent agency?
Yes.
Or they were listed?
Yes, well, agent, yes, they were listed.
Okay.
It was one gentleman.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right, I'll meet you for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We go out to dinner. Doesn't ask me, like, one question about the acting stuff at all. He's just sort of, like, talking it up. And then he's like, okay, well, do you want to order a bottle of wine? I'm thinking, like, what is going on here? Like, this is so weird. But again, I'm like, I don't know. So I was like, well, okay, sure. You know, I'll have a glass or whatever. And then he's like, well, we could actually take it back to my place.
Oh, dear.
And that's when it was like, okay, no.
This is not right.
No. So it's funny. At the time, I had a boyfriend. I was, like, doing long distance with this boyfriend. So I was like, well, you know what? Listen, this is, you know, I have a boyfriend, like, this is, you know, purely professional. And he got so angry and so upset, and it was just so uncomfortable. And I'm sure, you know, later on he got banned from, I can't even remember his name, but I'm sure he got banned from the agencies, because there's got to be other women who he's done this to. But it was horrible, and it was scary, and it was you know, you're fresh-faced, and you're sort of like, okay, well, you know, I mean, I can imagine so many girls just doing it because it's like, well, how else am I going to get in? Or, you know, maybe this really is how it is in LA. I mean, it was just, it was frightening. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's so tragic about it, is that the fact that you even had to resort to saying that you had a boyfriend.
Exactly.
Like, if you didn't have a boyfriend.
Exactly.
You'd have to make that, like
yes.
that would only be the legitimate
excuse.
You still didn't, like, no, this should not be happening. This is not appropriate. This is not.
Right.
But as you can see, you're young and you're hopeful and,
that's
you're,
totally what
you're
it
new
is.
And naive and you don't know. And so, you know, that's where predators find people to
Sure. And I was
upon.
The perfect, I was the perfect prey. Yeah.
And sadly, you know, that is what happened in so many workplace scenarios, which is why I think that, you know, HR departments have become such a crucial part of an organization. And I would say there's a high correlation between how solid and sound the HR department is as a reflection of how solid and sound the company is.
That makes sense.
If the HR department is weak,
yep,
then there's going to be a lot of funky business going along that shouldn't be occurring.
That makes so much sense. I like that analogy a lot.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
My beloved Coach Kelly. I love her. Okay. And give us a call anytime at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Want to drop into one of our emails?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hit it.
We have one here. Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, today's topic on workplace woes is perfect for me. What do I do with a boss who I believe may have a mental health disorder? I'm not a therapist, but I believe there is something mentally wrong with my boss. She is happy and almost frantic one minute, then really irritable and seriously down the next. I never know what mood she'll be in, and that in turn affects how she treats me. I, of course, don't say anything, but it's making it really hard for me to work with someone so all over the place. Suggestions? Signed, which mood will she be in?
Oh, God.
Okay.
I bet this is very common. Oh, my God. I mean, mental health disorders, they're common. And so, of course, bosses are going to have them. But, I mean, I think it serves in some ways. I'm sure, when she's happy and frantic, she can get a lot done and she's creative, But God, that is really difficult to deal with. I guess my first thought would be to talk to HR. And I want to know what you think about that. Mm-hmm. Because, obviously, I mean, if it's affecting how she's treating her and the other workers, then that's a big deal. And a mental health disorder, I mean, that's intense. That's very tough to deal with on an everyday basis. And I think there can be a solution without her jeopardizing her job, remaining anonymous and talking with HR about it. What do you think?
I'm going to make an attempt at humor here for just one moment. That or buy a year-long pass. Just assume working at that place is buying a year-long pass to Magic Mountain, and you're going to be on a roller coaster.
Yes, that
every
is
day.
Very intense.
But, that is humorous. But the reality is moody people are very difficult to be around.
Ugh.
And moody people often feel a strong sense of entitlement, whether they have a mental disorder or not, to actually impose their moods on other people and actually expect other people to move along with them. I'm down, then you're down. If I'm up, you're up.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a very unhealthy expectation to have of other people to be able to handle that, because it really does it alters somebody's sense of stability internally. So I really feel for this person, because that is just a very challenging.
I know.
So HR, absolutely. But I think some other things is maybe not to encourage too much private investigation here on this part of this person, but kind of take a step back. Just sit back and maybe just, without personalizing it, without getting caught up in it, if possible, just kind of check out what seems to instigate these kinds of moods, and
keep a journal of it, kind of?
A little bit. Sometimes clues come our way when we're not right in the throes and the thick of it or not affected by it, and we just kind of sit back a little bit and just say, all right.
Yeah.
And learning some protective defense mechanisms that are healthy.
Yeah.
So like one of the ones that I like is, when you go into a bank and they have those plexiglass windows.
Yes.
And, it's a boundary. You can see through it, but it's some protective. Come up with some sort of imagery that helps to protect you from the impact of this moodiness on the part of the boss, so that you're not, just constantly a ping pong ball.
Exactly.
For the moods.
Sure.
And just kind of observe, if you can, to find any sort of patterns. It could be that there's worse moods on Monday morning.
Yes.
Maybe the boss is having a challenging relationship.
Sure.
And is it a woman boss or?
I don't know if she said.
Ah, she is. This woman might be having love issues or, financial issues, or she might be fearing for her own job.
Yep.
She may be, like you said, possibly mental health disorder, maybe unmedicated, off meds, changing meds, hormonal, don't know her age, could be menopausal. So, I mean, there's so many things. It also, is there any sort of peer consultation within the company of other people that, like, we get to talk about the pros and cons of different situations in the workplace?
Mm-hmm.
I guess whatever avenues are possible, but mostly the number one thing that's right within your control is working on not personalizing this.
Exactly.
Unless it is personal. I mean,
sure.
somebody has a personal issue, then you got to hear what that is and be able to address it.
And then also never asking for anything during a mood, a raise, anything important, and sort of steering clear and saying, okay, you know what, maybe there's a better time to have this discussion.
Right. You know, also I was thinking, in some ways it's harder to deal with somebody who has mercurial moods, you know, the up and down swings, than it is for somebody who's just generally a grouch or generally grumpy. Because once you know what you're dealing with,
it's
you
kind of
get some workarounds.
Yes.
But this one is up and down. One day happy, the next minute
irritable.
I know
a lot of people like this.
Yeah. It's also probably somebody who just doesn't know how to manage stress.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
So I don't know, maybe even a suggestion of like a team building stress management workshop
would be very
helpful.
You
know, I don't know what this person's level is at the company, but
sure.
those are sometimes very healthy and productive suggestions for the whole team.
Exactly.
For the whole group.
I always wonder how these people get to the top with these kind of issues. Like, are they masking it? Do other people, you know, pass it by? Like, I don't know, except they're maybe they're doing exceptional work.
Sleeping
and then it can kind of
boss.
That too. I mean, seriously, it's like I just don't get it. But
it's almost, you know, it's funny I said that because that's the flip side of sexual harassment. I mean, people in lower down positions will often use their sexual appeal. I'm just guessing. I don't know that that's it at
sure.
all.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Well, in line with the question of how would she have gotten to that level? I mean, sometimes people will use to get to the top, to
Amazing.
Get raises, to get promoted, you know, which is almost like reverse sexual harassment.
Exactly. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Scary.
Very scary. Wow. So I guess that, you know, in all counts for people, when you're in messy situations with people, try to not personalize what isn't personal.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think that's a great piece of advice. I mean, in any arena it works, you know, it's true. Got to separate it.
And, you know, while the job market may not be so available, it still is an option to oftentimes look around, you know, look around in private. There's ways to see what else is out there without necessarily, you know, raising too many red flags.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't look while you're at work.
Sure.
But exactly at home. Mm-hmm. Sure.
There also could be a, if this is a direct subordinate to the boss, I would say, I think that having a one-on-one meeting to just say, is there anything that I am doing or could be doing that would help regulate the balance here in the office better?
Ooh, that's a good way to say it. I like that a lot because it's not like, your moods are making
moody.
Me crazy. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, bitch, you're moody.
Exactly. What can I do to...
Not liking it.
Yes. So I like that. I think that's a great way to say it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Our phone number here is 323-203-0815. Or send us an email. And today's topic is workplace woes, but feel free to call in about anything.
I once worked as a waitress in a small little restaurant not too far from here. It was very small at the time, and they were expanding. So it had a front patio, and it had a center where actually the kitchen was and a little counter, and then a back room that had more tables. And then they were adding on another side, so they were expanding. But the job for the server was to not only take the order, but also bus our own tables.
Oh my God.
And also get, they were shish kebabs, so we had to get the meat and the shish kebabs out of the fridge for the chef,
put them on
the plate, and set up the plates.
This is like stressing me out already. Oh my God.
So I think it was 19 at the time. I'd been kicked out of my house. My parents, I was one of those, I don't love you anymore.
Yeah.
You don't love me anymore. Blah, blah, blah. You're disowned. Okay, why? Okay, great.
Yeah.
So I was sleeping on my sister's floor and I got this job.
God.
I was bit by ants all over my body. I had these hives. Anyway, it was hysterical. So I start working and, you know, originally the boss, saw that there was a need for one person could not do the whole restaurant.
Thank God he woke up.
But he apparently had quite the crush on me. So his idea of a good time would be to give me more and more tables and work later and later and tell me because I was so good at it that, you know, you're the only one that can handle these tables.
Oh.
So definitely appealing to my need for some sort of
praise.
Acknowledgement and validation. And at the same time, working me to just to the ground. So not only would I start at like 7:30 at night, but then when the nightclubs would close down at like 12 or 1, people, so they decided to stay open till 4 in the morning.
Oh my
God.
So
now I'd be starting at 7:30, and then I would have all the trickling in patrons who would come in at 1 o'clock, you know,
oh
they were drunk, and it was, you know, it was just, it was like awful. But what an example of being young and naive and caught between this. But I like feeling like the star. Like that I'm getting all these accolades. Yeah. And, oh, he thinks I can do it, so I'll do it.
Sure.
And I'll do it well, and I'll keep doing it. Yeah. But then I finally realized, this is just insane.
Yeah.
This is absolutely brutally insane.
Oh.
So I made up with my parents and moved back. And I went back to college anyway. But
right, exactly.
It was one of those situations of, ugh.
Yeah. But what I love your stories, because there's always an amazing lesson that comes out. Like, I feel like you really learn immediately, kind of, or maybe not immediately, maybe a couple years later. But it's like you learn, like, okay, great. I'm not willing to put up with that. Or, wow, look at my part and look at, you know, where my character defects came into play here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's really, I like your accountability a lot.
It's funny you should say that, because I did tend to learn pretty quickly in a situation, but then I recreated and repeated it again.
Again,
over
in
and
a different
again.
Way.
It took a long time to actually acknowledge the pattern.
Yes.
It's once I was able to find the pattern in my behavior and how I was allowing these more emotional needs that were that just, I guess my main point here is, the workplace is not the place to have those needs met.
Right.
I mean, it's nice if we go to a workplace environment that's nurturing, mm-hmm. that's nourishing, that's kind, that's compassionate and caring, but it's not really a requirement.
Yes.
It is a requirement in a workplace environment to not be abusive.
Right.
But it's not a requirement to give somebody a whole bunch of emotional goodies.
Of course. That makes total sense. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think a lot of people expect that. Yeah. It's more of a bonus. It's a
Absolutely.
Bonus.
Absolutely. Let's go on to another one.
Sure. Dear Doc and Coach, I'm not sure you can help me, but I'm sure hoping you can try. I'm a female in my 40s, single and heterosexual. I really want a baby, badly. I know time is ticking, but I'm wondering if I should just go ahead and artificially inseminate. I'm just nervous to be a single mom. I know my friends who are moms say how hard it is with a partner. Do I just go for it and hope for the best? Thoughts, signed, give me a baby.
Well, I'm sorry, ma'am, but we can't give you a baby.
Exactly.
If we could,
we would. Exactly. Here's one under the table.
Here we go. You know, that's really a hard question, because I don't know in a situation like this that just going for it and seeing what happens is
the best plan.
Is the best plan. I mean, I think a lot more thought needs to really occur mm-hmm. here. I think maybe finding out from family members, finding out from friends, who's going to be instrumental. I don't know if this woman has to work. It sounds like probably as a single person, mm-hmm. then she probably would need to. So finding out who's going to be able to be helpful, who's
right.
going to be able to be, what is going to be your community core
sure.
support group.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that
I
makes
think
sense.
Anybody having a child, with partner or not with partner, it's important to understand what is your community support
yes.
going to be, because
yes.
in our world that's very isolating and withdrawn, and we have very little community support.
Yes.
If you don't get that kind of set in motion, you can feel very alone.
Exactly.
In that process.
Yeah.
And her, if she's going to do it on her own,
right.
really
exactly.
be alone.
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, I agree with you. And I think it's hard when you're so desperate. I think that you tend to just, like, you want somebody else to make the decision for you. You know, I think I can sense, like, she's reaching out. It's like, I don't know, you know, and I think you cannot make a decision when you're desperate. You kind of have to step back a little bit and maybe look at all the facts, kind of like what you were saying. And then the other thought I had was, maybe another option is just to freeze her egg. So she doesn't have
sure.
to immediately make this decision now, but maybe later, if she does find a partner, or she can really think on it without this, like she said, this, you know, ticking time clock.
Right.
Like, okay, great. Well, that's kind of taken care of. I can really think. I can sort out my life. I can, you know, see if there's more emotional support to help me, that kind of thing. That's what I was thinking.
Right. I agree. And I don't know how expensive that is these days, but for some people, that's not an option.
Right.
But, I mean, it's nice in theory, and I
yeah.
hope that she has that possibility, but
yeah.
Definitely slowing down, even if it's just slowing down and going to a couple of counseling sessions to just have somebody else that can
sure.
process this with you and walk
yes.
through some of the questions and the answers and
exactly.
the steps to take to
yeah.
really give this a much more thorough
decision making.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thought I was thinking too while you were talking is, I know a woman who never had kids and is a big sister mentor in a program, and so she mentors a child, and she's like, you know, this is such a great way for me because I never had kids. So, you know, there are ways where she could get that sort of baby fix or child fix and kind of feel like this, you know, surrogate mother, so to speak, you know, without actually having to do it totally on her own. I mean, obviously it's not the same thing, but it might be, you know, the next best thing.
Yeah, and just to take the opposite side for a minute too, I mean, I can certainly appreciate that level of intensity of I don't even know what my life would have been like if I had let pass by the opportunity to have a child. I mean, it's like the most important thing that I've ever done in my life. Of all the things I've done, that is been the most most important thing. So I can feel for her that, you know, and also we were sold such a bag of shit, excuse me, years back to say that, you know, the truth is that as women, our biology does, our clocks do tick, mm-hmm. and we don't have the same opportunities as we get older to have healthy, vibrant children. And a lot of people were sold this concept that, oh, there's because of all the advancements in technology and all that stuff. Don't worry. No need to rush.
Yes.
You know, go after your career. You can have it all. Woman, go for it. Go for it. Almost to a level that actually screwed many of the female population.
Sure, absolutely. It is very hard, I think, for women in our society today. It's like we're taught that, yes, go after your dreams, do it, and then, but, you know, and you can also have a baby and a family. It's like, it's just a hard, it's very, very, very difficult. How old were you when you had your daughter?
31.
Okay, yeah.
Just 31.
I was 31 when I had my first son. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, it was a good age. It was
perfect.
I wanted a child very early on. I mean, I had that mommy thing
going
on from... Oh, I would have made the worst choice of my entire life.
Me too.
Had I done that when I was younger. But, oh, I had the baby thing at like 21. I wanted a child so badly. But I also really wanted my career. I was just really grateful that I never... did it that way, and I did wait to at least be mature enough to handle the responsibilities of, and I and mostly single mom. I mean, my daughter's father stayed very involved as a as a co-parent, but we separated when she was very young, a baby. Yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, I can understand what it's like to manage
to
all
raise,
those responsibilities and have all that. So, and I wish I had practiced more what I'm preaching right now about organizing and understanding who in my family or a friend circle was going to be instrumental in being a support system.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, this is a really tough decision, a big one, life changing, one you can't take back.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad that she wrote in, and it's a very important question. And worthy of, I think, processing it on a much deeper level than either Coach Kelly or I are able to do.
And I'm sorry, one other thing I was just thinking is, and maybe it's a question of talking with other single moms of how they did it and, you know, kind of taking some notes on that.
Yeah, maybe
and
a support group.
Yes, exactly. And maybe, you know, sort of weighing, well, can I handle that?
I also always like cost pros and cons lists.
Yes.
You know, really intensely, not just the, oh, this is a plus and this is a minus, but how much is that plus valued? Like, how much is that minus? You know, there's some minuses that are so small, pluses that are so big, or some, there could be one minus that is worth 100
exactly.
points does not override the 20 pluses.
So my husband is so logical. He always does like Excel, like spreadsheets. And one time I had to make a decision about something, and it was exactly like you said, like it was kind of percentages. It was so funny. It was like, well, how much do you value this? I don't know. I value it. He'd be like, well, what percentage? I'm like, I don't know, 80%. And so he'd like kind of type that in. And then, well, what about the other one? I don't know. I value it too. Well, how much? I don't know, 50. And it kind of helped to really get, you know, quantitative and, you know, get analytical about it. But yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good piece of advice.
All right. Let's dive into one more.
Sure.
Do you want to go for it?
Go for it.
All right. Dear hosts, great show, by the way. My friends tell me that I'm the most judgmental person they know. They say I'm overly critical of everything and that I need to learn to lighten up and chill out. But I can't seem to help myself. I just don't think the world is a very good place and I want to make changes for the better. I guess I can sound pretty controlling and demeaning, but I just can't seem to keep my mouth shut when I think someone is doing something wrong or could behave better than they are. Do I need to learn more tact or should I just keep on driving my points home? Signed, known for my arrogance.
Sounds like a offshoot from our show last week.
Exactly. It really does.
Perfect email. Yeah. So we were all about how to deal with criticisms and judgments.
Sure.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a great start to even be willing to acknowledge. If you're getting a lot of feedback from people that you who you trust, then more than likely there's at least a granule of truth to it.
I was thinking that.
So good to take some ownership of that.
Sure.
I don't know. You know, it's always... a good question when somebody says, but when I think someone's doing something wrong, like what do we define as wrong? Wrong to us?
Right.
Wrong ethically, morally, wrong legally? I mean, there's so many definitions of what's wrong or right. So apparently she's very opinionated and she has her boxes about what fits in right and what fits in wrong. Right?
Yes.
So she wants to be outspoken. You know, you go, I think I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
So, well, I was thinking that, you know, maybe it's a combination of being more tactful in front of people, and then privately, if she feels the need to unload, writing her own blog, or his blog, I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, writing a blog on sort of opinions about things, like, oh, I went to the grocery store today, and the cashier said this, you know, and sort of being able to be vocal, and feel heard, and, you know, want to make changes for the better, quote-unquote, in society, but then in front of people, maybe just being a little bit more tactful. No, that's kind of my thought.
Yeah, I mean, tactfulness, I absolutely agree. I think that sometimes there's a really fine line between censorship and assertive expression. You know, like sometimes we say, the classic to tell somebody, be nice, which basically means pretend not to know.
You know,
be nice, be nice, be nice. And at a certain point you say, but why do I want to be nice or pretend not to know when this may be just an atrocity?
Right.
So I think also looking on the continuum of, you know, where is it, when is it really important? Like if there's really, like we're saying, wrong or right, if there's some really huge moral or illegal act going on in front of you, I think that more and more people should be able to be assertive and be responsible.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have that whole syndrome of diffusion of responsibility where everybody goes, well, somebody else will handle it.
Exactly.
Somebody else will handle it. Meanwhile, somebody's getting raped in the
Kitty
apartment.
Genesis, whatever.
Right? Or the person who's stranded on the highway in the middle of the lane and can't get over because they have a flat tire and people are just whizzing by and nobody bothers to help them you know, get help. Not to put yourself in danger, but certainly, you know, like, so I think the model that I use is if you're going to risk your own self or put yourself in danger, pause, because if it's not your emergency, then it's better not to put yourself in that situation. But if you can be instrumental and actually be helpful in something to right a wrong, then that's okay. But again, maybe asking your friends who seem to have a pretty good pulse on you about, you know, where are you sweating the small stuff?
Exactly.
Where are you nitpicking? Where are you really making some mountain out of a molehill that really is best to, like you're saying, write it in a journal, write it on a blog.
Yeah.
Get some comic relief about it. Pause for a minute because you might have a different perspective on it in a few minutes.
But I agree with you. I think the friends are going to be a great barometer. Especially, I mean, if they're honest friends and they tell you the truth. But
sounds like they are if they're willing
to confront. If they're willing to say it. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, I mean, I think that to me is a real definition of a true friend, someone who can really be upfront and honest with you. I have a friend who just told me he had a friend who said to him, like, you're being self-centered, you're always negative, you know, kind of really laid it down. And he reported back to me and he was like, Kelly, it was like the best thing that ever happened to me. Like, yes, it stung, but he opened his eyes. You know, of course, I've been saying the same thing to the friend, but he didn't quite hear it from me, but I guess he heard it from the different friend. So it's, I think it's a really, really good thing to have a friend who can be really open and honest.
I think that's wonderful. And there are certainly the safer people with whom you can do that. And those who, if you tell them something that they do not care to hear, will come back and just lambast you with retaliation. You think I'm that
right, way? Right, exactly. But here's your problem,
right, almost like storing, like somehow since I've chosen not to tell you what I really think, you have no license to tell me. And then if you unleash on me, boy, I am going to unleash on you. And those are some of the worst things. So in situations like that, I say proceed very cautiously. Start with the smallest statement of what could be heard as criticism unwanted first, just to test the water.
Yes, check, you know, the temperature.
The full-fledged disclosure of, hey, by the way, you know, I find your attitude is pretty,
pretty
flat or kind of a bummer,
you
know, right off the bat could actually be
Met with. But I love, like, doing the sandwich method. So it's like, you know what I love? I love how you're such a loyal friend and you're always there for me. One thing that's really hard is when I feel like you're, you know, really judgmental of others or, you know, that kind of thing. And then sort of sandwich it again with, like, another great positive statement, you know? And you know, it's, but you're so funny and I really love that, you know, kind of ending that way and, you know.
Sure. Now, I know some who are listening will say, well, that's just manipulation, isn't it? Right? I mean,
right.
The one who wants to just be able to say whatever
sure.
they want to say, whatever they want to say. But you know what? I think that constructive manipulation or mm-hmm. instructive manipulation at times is
yes,
it's a
necessary.
Powerful tool and yeah. actually mm-hmm. a legitimate tool for getting along with
of
people.
Course.
For, you know, it's destructive manipulation.
Yes.
It's like trying to do that method so that you can actually get one over on someone or
sure.
take something that doesn't belong
exactly.
to you from someone.
Right.
Yeah, that's when it's troublesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. But good show.
Yes.
Yes,
so
as
really
always.
Quick.
So next time, please send us your emails, because as you noticed, we just read one now that was fitting to our topic last week. So
right.
keep bringing them in. And as you have heard, we have covered so many topics. We love relationships. Mm-hmm. We love, you know, we haven't talked much about parent-child relationships
oh,
or things like that. But, you know, maybe we're going to do a free-for-all next week. So we haven't really talked through what kind of.
Yes, yeah, what we want to do.
Talk about. We're going to talk about anything.
Everything.
Anything and everything. And Kelly, give us your website.
Sure. It's Kelly, K-E-L-L-I, Miller, M-I-L-L dot E-R dot com. And my book is Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband. You can find that on Amazon.
In case Kelly has forgotten who she is, it is KellyMiller.com.
Yes, exactly. I told Dr. Deborah, today is a little off day.
Oh, you've been doing great. I'm
Thank
so glad
you.
That you showed up. I know you weren't feeling all that well.
Yeah.
And feel free to go visit my website at DrDeborahOnline.com. That's DrDeborahOnline.com. I've got lots of books and a blog and mm-hmm. lots of fun things. So looking forward
Check
to seeing you on the site. Looking forward to seeing you on our show. I
Sounds
wish we could
good.
See you, but we can't. But you can hear us, and we like to hear from you.
Sounds good. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.